It sounds like a very large amount of money, doesn't it? $195 billion.
Well, particularly when you say that, talking about using it on our defence spending, when we've got a health system that's absolutely, well, it's crippled at the moment, and it needs a big injection of funds, and it's not getting it. You've got health, you've got education that requires a huge, big spend.
Yep.
We can find $195 billion on defence?
Well, we are going to be doing it. It's on the front page of all the papers today. The Telegraph's headline is Fortress Australia. And I see a lot of discussion about the amount of money and whether we've fallen behind in our defence spending and the proportion that we're spending of GDP. But I reckon a lot of people's question is very simple. The submarines that we're buying, the flashy new planes that we're buying, which are cutting edge and cost a lot of money, what are they going to do in the future? What are we envisaging our bigger, bolder defence force doing in practical terms? Dr. Keith Suter is the Managing Director of the Global Directions Think Tank. Dr. Suter, good morning.
Yes, good morning, John. Good morning, Gary.
Keith, thanks for joining us. We'll look at the justification behind this huge amount of money in a moment. But firstly, things like submarines. We're going to double the amount of submarines we have in this country. What's the threat? What's the naval threat to Australia?
That is a good question. You know, it's always been argued that the problem for Australia is that we don't have a problem. If you're living in Europe, or at least during the Cold War, you knew where the problem was. It's coming over the border from the Russians. When you're in Australia, it's very difficult to work out exactly where our problem is. Don't forget that we've not had any threat of invasion on this country since 1941, 1942. We've had a confrontation with Indonesia. And, of course, what is interesting is that, in my view, the real problems for Australia will come from the increasing power of Indonesia. Indonesia is set to become the largest country in this region, overtaking Australia. It's bought the East German Navy. But we're not allowed to make any comments about the aggressive behaviour of Indonesia. And instead, the white paper is focusing still on China and the events in the South China Sea, which are certainly troubling. But I agree with you. I'm still not clear exactly what the problem is that we're seeking to solve. And so you then have to say, well, why are we doing all this expenditure? And when you look at the debate, it's actually not a debate about strategic objectives. It's about financial revival, particularly looking at the Premier of South Australia, because he wants the submarines built there. So, in fact, we're talking about military, what I call military socialism, what President Eisenhower referred to as the military-industrial complex. Because government's reluctant to spend money, as you've just said, in health and education, we will spend it on defence. And that's what you want. If you want to revive your local economy with defence, with government expenditure, you have a defence focus. And that's obviously what defence is now about. It's about putting money into the local economy rather than somebody asking the question, well, why do we need all this new equipment?
I mean, when you look at some of the headlines today, one of the headlines says we need to maintain our supremacy when it comes to defence in this region. I wouldn't have thought we're one of the supreme defensive organisations or countries in this area.
Well, economically, up until this current time, we have been the dominant economic power. That's why I'm flagging the rise of Indonesia.
Yes, when you talk about size with Indonesia, you're talking about economic size, aren't you?
The economic size of Indonesia, of course, the population is 10 times Australia's size, but it's also a very large, unruly giant. It's like trying to go to sleep at night with an elephant in the bed beside you. Will it roll north, in which case it'll be a problem for the Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, or will it roll south, in which case it's a problem for Australia? That's going to be the problem because Indonesia is going to get richer, but it's also got immense internal problems. But when you read defence white papers, they traditionally only speak about the threat coming to Australia through the north. In other words, they never make comments about Indonesia, but that's where the threat will come. It'll go through Indonesia. Well, what's on the other side of Indonesia? You've got Singapore, you've got Malaysia, you've got the Philippines. None of those are major threats for us. The only problem we've got in this immediate region is Indonesia, plus, of course, our responsibilities for trying to maintain a bit of order in Papua New Guinea.
And a large part of this white paper is being driven by our relationship with the US and surely appeasing the US with its sort of like battle at the moment with China over
the
region.
That is exactly it. The biggest foreign policy challenge for no matter who is in Canberra for the coming decades will be able to keep China and the United States together. We're like a child caught between divorcing parents. The United States is our major military ally, but China is now our major trading partner. Your comments about Chinese investment in real estate is very interesting. I think it's unlikely the Chinese are going to try to invade Australia when they're busy buying it.
Mm. They're already here.
Japanese, it's what the Japanese learned, remember? It's cheaper to invest in a country than try to take it over.
It is an astonishing figure that we're going to spend $49 billion upgrading the Navy and only $35 billion on the Army and $34 on the Air Force.
And you look at who's doing the heavy lifting, it's the Army.
Yeah.
And this is the issue that is found in other defence forces. It's, for example, at this very moment in the UK, there is a debate about expanding or updating the British nuclear deterrent, the Trident submarine programme. And a lot of retired generals have said, look, the people who are doing the fighting at the moment are not the Navy, it's the soldiers. The Taliban aren't using nuclear submarines, and so we've got to be training our military forces for peacekeeping operations. It's the British argument, and I think it's one that we can apply here in Australia. When you look at where our recent operations have been, they're not major battles out in the South Pacific or the Atlantic or anything like that. It's actually battles in Iraq, Afghanistan, potentially Syria.
We keep hearing about the threat of China, but you've raised the more immediate threat that you think is Indonesia. What is the threat? Will it be a threat over not just economics, but also over land and food?
Well, this is, you know, in the dark recesses, in the corridors of power, that is certainly the fear. I remember the debate that I had with a senior army officer about the Landmines Convention, which the Howard government ratified when it came to power. And the army opposed that because they said, look, we need to have landmines to strewn across northern Australia for when the Indonesians wade ashore. Now, the Howard government ignored those protestations, went ahead and ratified the Landmines Treaty, banning Australia from having landmines. But it is interesting that the job of defence planners is to think about the unthinkable. So one of the things you've got to think about is, well, where would we have confrontations with Indonesia? And most of that planning is never made available to the public because it would cause a high degree of public anxiety. But that is certainly, obviously, a major consideration.
So the people listening to us right now, when they think, all right, there's all those people in Indonesia, we've got a really tiny population for the amount of land we have, and down the track, you know, generations down the track, the concern might be that ultimately others might think, well, we need to put a few more people down there.
And not only people, but also if you think about our resources, that we've got an immense amount of resources in northern Australia. It's very, you know, we have an iron triangle, that's what I refer to it. Sydney, yep. Melbourne and Canberra. That's where the media are based. That's where the politicians are based. If you draw a line from the Pilbara in Western Australia across to Gladstone in Queensland, which is where you have all that mineral wealth, northern Queensland, northern territory, northern Western Australia, only five MPs out of 150 come from north of that line. Yep. The result is that the affairs of northern Australia really don't get that much attention. And yet that's where the resource strength is for this country, including, of course, the whole new era of liquefied natural gas.
Just really quickly, because people are ringing in talking about you know, foreign aid, because we give foreign aid to Indonesia. So if they're going to be surpassing us economically, should we still be giving them foreign aid?
Well, that's a good question. But we don't give foreign aid to help them. We give foreign aid to help Australian businesses. Yep. 80% of Australia's foreign aid never leaves Australia. I receive foreign aid in the days when I've taught at Australian universities and we've had Indonesian students here on AusAid grants. I'm being paid foreign aid to educate these people. So we no longer give money overseas as cash payments. We started out that way in the Menzies era.
We're doing it in a more sophisticated way now.
It's more so, and it's helping Australia's business. Right. That's what foreign aid is all about.
Right. Dr. Suter, thank you.
Thank you.
Fascinating.
Dr. Keith Suter from the Global Directions Think Tank. Some thoughts on that? A lot of you are actually involved with the Defence Forces. Some of you are involved with, you know, particularly the Army. You may have some thoughts on the disparity of that spending.
And maybe you can justify why it's worth spending $195 billion on upgrading our Defence Forces when we need it in so many other areas. Please explain.